The following program contains views and opinions that do not necessarily reflect those of KMRE staff or of the Spark Museum of Electrical Invention.
You are tuned to Cascadia News Now on KMRE. I'm Stephanie Contours. In the studio with me, my co-host Tim Johnson, Dave Willingham, and this week we are so honored to have Joe Tehan of KGMI and formerly of The Joe Show. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
So glad that you're here because we have so much to talk about, including the death penalty, Doug Erickson, Vendetta City and homelessness, and so much ledge and bill signing. But first, I want to announce a very small trivia contest, KMRE and Cascadia News Now. The question is, can you name the four horsemen of democracy? This is a very specific quote from Washington, and if you listen to our show for the next 10 or 15 minutes, you'll have the answer. What is the four horsemen of democracy? You can either tweet us at KMRE, 1023. You can Facebook us at KMRE or Cascadia News Now, or you can find us on the Instagram. One random winner is going to get a prize. I'm serious. It's an actual prize. So let's get into it straight off with Jay Inslee, our governor, and some of the biggest news of a very big news week. I'm talking about the Voting Rights Act, which is something that is making national news. And even Tina Podlowski this week tweeted, way to go, Washington State. And I'm going to try to unpack it, and then these gentlemen can come in and correct me, because it's one of the more complex acts or one of the more complex bills. And basically what it addresses is inequality in representation in Washington State, specifically for different groups of ethnicities, people of different races, people of different language centers, where in a district or a county, if a group of people, an ethnic group, is in one area and it is a race, as most races, which are at large, meaning everybody in the county votes for this position, then they're not represented. They can get swamped very easily. What this Voting Rights Act does is gives districts the power and counties to make district voting so that people will be represented more equally and fairly. Also keeps the state from being sued. The example that I want to bring up is Yakima, who has a 40% Latino population, had not had a city council person of Latino background up until 2014. And that was the test case. That was the area where people were not represented. And so since they changed from at-large to district-based voting, which is what the Voting Rights Act gives us all the permission to do, there have been three people of Latino descent elected to city council, including other people have been elected as well. So did I do a good job? Does somebody want to correct me?
Well, I'm going to jump in, and I'm going to try to explain it a little more broadly and maybe even more simply. I see this as a celebration in Washington of voting rights. It's a enthusiastic attempt to expand the franchise, so to speak, to get more people engaged, and that is not just people of color or people who are disadvantaged, but youth vote, young people coming in. And it shows a lot of confidence, I think, inside the Democratic Party of Washington that they recognize that their future is dependent on getting more people involved in democracy. I think it's a very exciting package that the governor signed.
Yeah, with especially the youth vote, I think that's an important step. With, I believe, 16-year-olds being able to pre-register, and then they will be eligible to vote when they turn 18, and getting them, especially what we're seeing now out on the streets, where this Saturday we're going to have young people back marching here in Bellingham and across the country, really involved in an issue that it touches them very personally, and I'm hoping at. Of course, registering is one step in the process. And I've got an 18-year-old who is, we went and got an enhanced driver's license for him and registered him to vote at that time. And just after he turned 18, and he hasn't voted yet. So I think it's a, you know, incumbent on we adults to continue to encourage young people and make sure that they understand that this is a voice that they have and can really use that. The district only, or the district voting as well, a very important step. And as you said,
actually talking about is some of the other bills that are part of a voting rights mm-hmm. package. The act is specifically about district voting, but you're hitting on some of the other horsemen of democracy. So we'll get into that in a second, because mm-hmm. there's three other things that are huge news for Washington. I don't quite want to mix them all up just yet, because some of the pushback, and Tim, you're right about the broader picture, but some of the pushback in the legislative session was specifically around the issue of giving people representation. And it's interesting because it had bipartisan support, but some of the Republicans who were against it brought up kind of a flip of how this wasn't fair to people of color was their argument. As a matter of fact, Liz Pike, a representative from Camas, Republican, said, and I quote, "This bill is an insult to people of color and communities." I'd like to note that Liz Pike herself, not a person of color.
Well, that's, you know, we've seen in this country, there's a very strong trend of just adopting what you think other people should think. You know, there's the there's a very popular photo that goes around the internet that's African American Republicans' booth at a county fair that is staffed entirely by white people. And
wow.
There's always that. There's always the, well, I think the victims are the real racists and that sort of thing. But I think that this is a good positive step. There's so much monkeying that can happen with the way maps are drawn. And it's really easy to hide behind a, you know, seemingly neutral thing. We're just putting lines down, and this is just, it's just the way the creek goes. And it's really easy to encode racism and
one person, one vote. Isn't that fair? What's wrong with that? I mean, I think that's really what this addresses, this act, is mm-hmm. why is that not okay? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you're.
Yeah, and it's not an easy sell. There's, you know, it's really easy to say, well, I want to vote for all of the people that are representing me, and I don't think that's an invalid position, but it's not a position that comes in a vacuum. And there's other factors that need to be considered.
Right.
Yeah. As we're seeing in many other states, primarily Republican-controlled states, and this a false argument of voter fraud and these onerous voter ID laws that are being put in place. In some places, feeling some pushback from the judicial branch, but it's great to see here in Washington State us going in exactly the opposite direction and, you know, pushing for making the ability to vote just a universal thing, really a right.
So you are getting into the other thing. So the Voting Rights Act was one of the horsemen that Governor Inslee was referring to. And there are four. One is the Voting Rights Act. One, as you talked about, was pre-registering people who are, and now this and a couple more are going to be as of 2019, I think, but people who are 16 will be able to pre-register for mm-hmm. when they're 18. So that gets people already engaged. That's super exciting. And then one of them is reducing the delay period between registering and the election, so you will be able to vote or register to vote right up until the election. That's huge. I've seen people over and over again sort of catch fire in the last week with, yeah. you know, people who are just, I don't want to hear about it. And suddenly they get it and it's too late or moved and didn't realize that they'd moved. So this catches a lot of people. And then the biggest news, I think, is the fact that we will be an automatic voter registration state. So those are the four horsemen that Inslee was referring to. And the point of the automatic voter registration is that when you get a driver's license, you will be registered to vote as of 2019. Not today, not tomorrow. So go register to vote if you haven't. But as of 2019, you will have to opt out from voting instead of opting in. So everybody will be registered to vote pretty much.
Yeah.
And this gets to kind of back to what I was saying, which is that and I want to it's hard to put this judiciously, but I think it speaks volumes about the vision of the two parties, that the one party believes that the way through is to restrict, control, reduce the number of people that are involved in democracy, and the other party is confident that if they throw the gates open and they let more and more people participate, that the outcome is going to be better.
Well, we do paint it that way with good reason, and we can see, especially across the country, that is often the case. But I've got to shout out to the Republicans who supported this, and that I believe any politician who is decent and really cares about representing their people should want to get votes accurately and believes that they would based on their belief value. And I think there are some Republicans and conservatives out there who do. Unfortunately, they've got a bad name, especially across the nation with all of the voting rights pushes and license demands and pulling people off of the rolls. And there's been a lot of underhanded
stuff.
Well,
I think that too. But it also speaks to what it takes to survive as a Republican in the state of Washington and on the Blue Coast in general. You have to, I think, be a little more circumspect, a little more generous maybe than you do in the deep red heartland of this country. But, you know, if you want to survive in the legislature of Washington, in the Puget Sound area, you've got to give quite a bit, I think, as a Republican. So,
unless you're from Camas.
Yeah, there you go. There are those places that are pretty much locked in.
Unfortunately. So it is super exciting news. As I said, we are leading the nation and getting national attention for it. So yay behind the blue curtain or whatever it is that we are. But Inslee signed a lot of bills today. This was a super bill signing day. There was the Reproductive Parity Act, which we talked about last week. And the short story about that is if you are a health insurance provider in Washington and you offer maternity care, you have to offer other choices, including birth control and abortion. We have choice across the board or we don't have it at all. That's been a fight for at least, I think, 10 years, the Reproductive Parity Act. So that's huge. And then the Me Too movement, there was a bunch of bills that Governor Inslee signed that are really about, I mean, it's part of the Me Too wave that's happening around the country. And for those who are not paying attention, Me Too is about bringing sexual harassment to light, charging people, not hiding away or feeling ashamed or feeling like nobody will listen to you. And these bills in Washington state primarily revolve around employment law. Mm-hmm. So non-disclosure agreements, and what that means is when you are hired, you might sign a non-disclosure agreement to not give away company secrets or something like that. But there are non-disclosure agreements that keep employees from speaking out about sexual harassment or assault. No more in Washington state. These bills make that illegal. It prevents non-disclosure agreements from affecting an employee's ability to gather information or witness testimony. And it makes void any employment contract that does not protect an employee's right to sexual harassment or assault complaints with authorities.
Yeah, and I guess I would summarize these. I had spoken to Senator Kevin Ranker before the legislative session, and he outlined a lot of these that would be coming forward. And it's Washington State's response to Hobby Lobby, the Hobby Lobby decision of the Supreme Court, which sort of gave the power of the employer to make decisions about whether you could access birth control or whether you had rights to make complaints.
You're going back
or whatever.
To the Reproductive Parity Act.
Right, mm-hmm. Reproductive, but also these other things, which mm-hmm. the Supreme Court basically said, if you're a small company, you have certain rights based upon your belief system in order to do these restrictions. And in the state of Washington, we sort of pushed back on that and said, no, people actually, even if you're employed by somebody, you have rights under that employer, and these are mechanisms by which the people of Washington, particularly the women of Washington, have rights now under their employers.
Yeah, it almost seems that there's this conservative idea that business owners and executives are all powerful within their organizations, and they have this right to, or rights to, just declare things and manipulate their employees and really in certain ways, especially reproductive rights, that sort of thing, control their lives and dictate to them how they'll live and how, what the makeup of their family may be, that sort of thing. And I'm just really glad that here in Washington that we have lawmakers that said no, that as Tim said, that workers have rights and they have a right to their own freedoms and pursuits of happiness, and that the employer does not have control over that employee, especially once they're out the door. I mean, obviously, employers have certain amounts of control and a say over how an employee conducts themselves, but I'm just glad that that's now in, you know, it's a law. And with the Me Too bills as well, you know, it's too bad that we have to put this in writing, you know, have a law against this kind of thing, that, you know, an employer can, you know, somehow has the right to hide charges of sexual harassment and that sort of thing and keep it from being public or keep it from law enforcement and, you know, declare, you know, like what we're seeing on a national stage now, women saying, I was harassed, you know, and I'm being silenced, and they can't speak out, and they're being told that they shouldn't, and
yeah.
Well, and I don't want to conflate those two completely, and I think Tim, you're absolutely right about Hobby Lobby in terms of reproductive parity and how they tried to take a tact of it's our religious choice, we can believe what we want to, we don't have to provide birth control, much less abortion if we don't want to. It's hard for me to imagine a company or a business claiming a religious reason for wanting a non-disclosure agreement about harassment. Mm-hmm. The only thing I imagine as an argument is a small business saying, well, we can't afford that, and so...
Well, let me draw the link there. You know, the underlying thread is the power dynamic between the employer
Correct.
And the employee. And in this country, with the way our society and economy is structured, as an employee, you are in a lot of ways at the mercy of your employer.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of jobs, you know, most of the jobs that have been created this century are low-paying service industry jobs that are real easy to swap someone else out for. And so if you have a complaint against your employer, you want to be treated better. For them, in a lot of cases, they can just get rid of you. They
well,
can get
we are
else.
An at-will state, which means you don't have to have a reason to fire someone.
And, right. You know, it's, you know, kind of shocking and appalling that anyone who is the victim of a crime, regardless of the perpetrator or anything like that, could be retaliated against by their employer for contacting the police or for disclosing that that crime occurred is absurd, and it's terrible that we need protections like these. But, you know, really, the power dynamic is the problem, and until we really start to address that, we're going to continue to have situations like this.
Right. Well said, Dave. I mean, I think that is actually the crux of it, is these employers, whether they are mean to or not, they hold economic power over their employees, and I think the sum of these bills is they give workers a little pushback against that economic power. I mean, that power dynamic is durable, and it's going to, as you said, Stephanie, it's an at-will employer state. Those kinds of power imbalances are durable, and they're going to endure. But this gives the you know, citizens, particularly women of Washington, just a little more power to push back on that.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you think about it, we're tied to our jobs in many ways, and this isn't exactly what we're talking about, but I mean, health insurance is a huge thing for people. And when you have a job that you have health insurance, especially if you've got dependents, and even more so if you've got someone in your family who needs regular medical care, you feel stuck. I mean, you can feel stuck in that job, and then and even can be easily manipulated, I think. And it's a real thing, and so that's a whole other bag or box of worms, you know. But
the entire show.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But you know, that economic power that employers have over us is it's daunting.
And loosely, again, doesn't specifically relate, but our show last week, we talked with Michelle Stelovich from the Northwest Washington Central Labor Council and Rosalinda Guillen about the attacks on unions. And Janus versus AFSCME in the Supreme Court, it hasn't been decided yet, but we are not in the worker environment that we were in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the degree of freedom that you have these days as an employee is very limited. Your freedom is, you know, you can not work, you can get Section 8 vouchers, you can maybe find a place that'll take them, or you can die in the street. There's no net, there's no safety, and you know, I'm not going to get into specifically the person, but there was someone responding in this past week to the Me Too movement who said, well, that's just the price you pay for
what? Come on, give us a name.
It was Terry Gilliam.
Okay.
And
wow.
If that's a price that you're freely willing to pay and you do so gladly, good for you. But this is about the people who didn't get to choose, who, you know, their freedom was taken away because of the structure we're in and the employer they had. And I'm really glad to, you know, be here in Washington and leading the nation on this.
Yeah, I've been following the story of this theater down in Olympia and how they had repeatedly invited Horowitz, the playwright. And many women have charged him with sexual harassment indecent come-ons and that thing. And this has gone on for years. And I was – my jaw dropped. I was reading an article in the paper about it just yesterday. And the couple that founded the theater and still are the primary operators of it, the man was quoted – his name escapes me at the moment. But he told he said that one of these women who was attacked basically in her hotel room by this playwright said, she's a big girl, she can take care of herself, and that this mentality is there. And especially, you know, in a very small environment like theater, and to have opportunities is, you know, they're few and far between. And when you do get opportunities in that that industry, it's pretty special. But then, you know, to just think about how to have your dreams dashed in that
way. Right, and it doesn't matter if it's a small, close, nepotistic environment like community theater, or if it's Hollywood. Mm-hmm. The same fear, the same threat that you will never work in this town again.
Right.
It's terrifying, and it has been silencing. And I think going back to these bills, boy, they're not enough. They're not going to completely make a difference, but it's a good step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
So Inslee signed a bunch more bills. Anybody else want to talk about? I think hearing aids are now included in Medicaid. And
Finally.
No, seriously. Mm-hmm. I mean, things that are automatic. There's other stuff. Oh, the scholarships for Dreamers, I think he signed.
Yeah. And along that note, I want to talk about one thing that is kind of a minor thing. But they passed a credit parity bill that will accept international baccalaureate credits to state colleges at the, you know, same rate they would other private schools. And that's something that a lot of homeschool and a lot of people who can't get to, you know, their local schools do to earn credits. That's a big deal. And that's, you know, it's not, you know, fighting sexual assault, but it's going to make a real difference to some people's lives. And I was very happy to see that.
Well, on the environmental side, Jay last week signed the Orca Protection Bill, and he did that at a big meeting, the Pacific Coast Coalition, which is California, Washington, Oregon, British Columbia, Alaska, and they all had done their own particular sorts of initiatives. So that was a big one. I mean, Washington State putting money into it, stepping up, I think probably the most important part of the entire package was to work more closely trans border with British Columbia to try to solve some of the problems of the Salish Sea. But that on an environmental side, that was a big one too.
And Tim Johnson, that is the subject of your gristle this week.
Correct.
So if you wanted some more in-depth look at that, including some good perspectives, check out the gristle this week. But why don't you tell us just briefly, how are orcas now more protected?
Well, I would say that they're not more protected, but there is an acknowledgement and an admission that they are endangered, that their populations are crashing. There's a much better understanding, I think, of the forces that are causing that, one of which is they're starving because Chinook runs are down. And so you've got to solve the Chinook problem at the same time you solve, which is a great thing to solve. We need more Chinook to solve that at the same time as orcas. So I would say it's not a cure for anything, but it is an admission that there's a problem and there was money put to it, which is kind of amazing in a legislature, because a lot of times they pass bills and they say, well, this is a big problem, but we don't have any money and we're not going to put anything towards it. This is both an acknowledgement of a problem and the assignment of some resources to solve the problem.
Yeah, ship noise is another big issue.
Yes.
And, you know, we're faced with this prospect of
How does ship noise, for people who don't know, impact orcas?
Well, obviously they, you know, communicate audibly.
Echolocation.
Yeah, and that's how they find their food.
And each other.
Yeah. And, that noisy sound, it's hard for them to make those connections. And we're looking at, with this Kinder Morgan pipeline in BC, it's the potential to vastly increase the amount of tanker traffic through the Salish Sea and just, of course, the sound. And that's not even considering the pollution impacts of a spill, but there are a lot of challenges, and I think Tim's absolutely right. I mean, we have to start at the source. We need to increase the orca's food source and continue down this road of replacing old culverts and improving fish passage and working with the tribes and others in really having a concerted effort in improving the ability for these species to really thrive and expand, and because otherwise we will lose these whales and many others, many other species as well.
And some oh go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna jump in at the end there. And it's not that we can't. You know, if we lose the orca, it's because we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm glad to see Washington's taking this step. I hope we're going to have, continued firmer talks about our neighbors up north dumping sewage into the Salish Sea. But, I'm glad to see some progress.
Right, and that comes along with the news this week that the last Sudanese white rhino male died. That species is gone because it wasn't cared for. And so we need to be cognizant of these things. It's very possible that we will lose our Puget Sound resident orcas. It's very possible that even if we move forward and start working immediately, we may lose those. So it's a very precarious situation.
A reminder to all that we are in the process of a mass extinction globally, and that we have a very strong hand in that. Tim, you did say earlier that the orcas weren't specifically protected, but concomitant with what you were talking about, there was Kevin Ranker's bill to protect orcas in terms of not keeping them in captivity, a la SeaWorld and those kinds of things, and I believe that passed and was signed as well. So that's a small thing, but it's not a small thing to an orca.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, huge progress in terms of the bills that were signed. And we want to take a look at a couple of other legislative issues which did and did not pass. I want to remind you are listening to Cascadia News Now. I'm Stephanie Contouris, Tim Johnson, Dave Willingham, and we're lucky to have Joe Tehan with us. And you are listening to KMRE 102.3 FM Bellingham and 102.5 KAVZ Deming Van Zandt on the web at kmre.org and kpnw.db. So let's take a look at a couple of other stories we touched on last week that I think are pretty important. And one of them was the I-940 initiative that was going to change how police officers are prosecuted in our state. The way that it stands now, if there is a fatal shooting, we have to prove malice in order to prosecute a police officer. An initiative was passed that would change that, change some other things, mandating mental health training for police officers, first aid training. We were all excited, or at least I was excited, to vote on that come November. And then, boom, the legislature worked with both police officers and De-Escalate Washington, who brought the initiative forward. And they had a last minute, I don't know if it's a Hail Mary or...
There's a football metaphor in there
somewhere. Yeah. Yeah. And then they passed a bill, and that's great. Nobody gets to vote on it, and also it may be unconstitutional.
Yeah, as I understand, they skirted the initiative rules as because they were supposed to either pass the initiative or as is or refer it to the ballot.
Correct.
And they altered it and then passed it, and and the governor signed it. So
right.
Because if they had passed it exactly the way that we, the people, had signed enough signatures to get it on the ballot, then our process, if we're like, wait, we didn't get to vote on it, is a referendum. We can say like, well, wait, we want to actually decide if we wanted you to. But once they change it, it's a whole different thing. And I know, Dave, you talked about it last week. One of the changes that was kind of important to our Chief Dahl was the idea of dropping everything to provide first aid rather than being able to provide first aid at the earliest safe opportunity. Maybe a small thing, but if it's not constitutional.
Well, I guess I'm going to do a little pushback on this because I think that the initiative process is an incomplete one. I mean, we elect these people to craft laws and to get together in a room and to talk about the things that we're talking about on the show, that this thing may not actually be the best and we need to do this, and you craft a bill together. And if you fail to do that, then it goes to the public and somebody writes an initiative, but the initiative often is bereft of all of that kind of discussion. It typically has a particular viewpoint in mind. I'm actually glad that they tried to tackle it. I don't know if I agree with the way that they did, but this is something that lawmakers, I think, should put together. And if they need to put it on a ballot for our support of that, I support that idea. Direct democracy is a great thing. I'm a little skeptical about it. I think it's the half measure that you have to do when your lawmakers are just not responsive to you.
Yeah, I would agree. I've always been skeptical, and I've lived here in Colorado as well, where the initiative process is very lively. Some states it's not used, or I don't know if it's even available.
Yeah,
in all
that's correct. States. It's not available.
And as you say, Tim, I think if the public is seen, the legislature just not doing anything on an important issue, then I think let's step in. Especially with taxation measures, the Tim Eymans and those things. That's the flaw I see in the initiative process, is that it operates in a vacuum. Especially when dealing with budgetary issues, you go to the voters and say, what would you rather pay for your car tabs, $300 a year or $35 a year? Well, yeah, no question, $35 a year. But then it doesn't address all that revenue that is then taken out of the state coffers, and revenue that's used to run, operate very, very important services and programs for all the people of Washington. So that's my big complaint, I guess, with the initiative process, is it just doesn't it doesn't think outside of the box. It's very just focused on one issue.
I totally agree with both of you. But this is a bizarre situation where the legislature had the opportunity to do this from the beginning. This didn't even have to go through this process. The commission that met, whose findings led to this that was between community activists, police officers, legislators. They released their findings in mid to late 2016. The legislature introduced some bills to address this in the 2017 session. They were given the petition from De-Escalate Washington saying, well, you at least put it on the ballot. And they said, no, you know, go get some signatures. De-Escalate Washington went and did that. And then at the last minute in the session, then they decided to do something. And I, you know, Tim, I'm with you. We pay these people to do this stuff because I'm not going to lie. I don't always make the greatest decisions when it comes to initiatives. But, you know, they weren't doing the job. And now they've done the job in a way that might break the whole thing, because the concept of the legislature saying, hey, that's a great initiative, we're going to yank it from the ballot, and now it's about, you know, leasing fees for my stables, that's really dangerous.
Right, right. No, you're right. And what you're talking about is a classic hijacking job where this thing, they had failed to take action. The public got fed up, and we're going to put something on a ballot. They come in the middle of it, and they just hijack it. And I'm sure we're going to talk about it later in the show, but the carbon tax is another classic where, you know, something comes close to coming on the ballot, and then they decide they're going to come in there and yank around on it a bit. But, you know, I wish our lawmakers were more responsible about stuff, and I wish they understood these things and it wasn't always in a crisis or trying to run the car off the road or a hijacking. I wish the environment was different because, you know, we were on the show a couple of weeks ago and we had Bellingham Police Chief Dahl on here, and he talked about his concern. You mentioned it, Stephanie, that as it was originally drafted, this put like somebody that was bleeding out that – you would be breaking the law if you did not help that person immediately, and that completely takes away the discretion of a police officer to say, you know, I know that this is a very, very grave situation going on here, but there's a lot of grave things happening, and I need to control that that crisis. So it really took the discretion away from the officer in the field. I mean, right. Which is legitimate.
Well, and I understand that you've made your points, everyone, about why we should and why we should not have initiatives. And Tim, maybe you wish we were a non-initiative state.
No, I don't wish
that. Okay, I'm just bringing that up, that you had some issues with it. But regardless of whether we need it or when we need it or when our legislators aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, if this happens where they do an end run around the initiative that was passed or to be on the ballot, got enough signatures to be on the ballot, now, if it's ruled unconstitutional what they did, we don't get to revert to having the initiative on the ballot. Let me be really clear that the reason people were frustrated was because of some of the deaths that have happened in Washington State. One person had mental health issues, was a pregnant woman with mental health issues, which she was killed. One man was a deaf man who had his back to a police officer, obviously did not hear him yell stop. And the issue, we can talk about how it gets resolved and, you know, different sausage making processes, but the issue is frustrating, and having to prove malice on behalf of an officer is nigh on impossible. I can't even imagine what it would take to do that. In the meantime, people aren't prosecuted. And yes, officers in the line of duty, they have to make horrible last-minute decisions. I would never want to be an officer. I think it's a high-risk job, terrifying for them sometimes. But they are human beings. They are citizens of Washington State. They should be prosecuted. And what's frustrating to me is now we're stuck not having the initiative or maybe the bill.
Right.
And this was a beautiful, soaring, Aaron Sorkin-esque moment where the police unions got together and they said, we don't want to fight this. We don't want to spend the entire year fighting over a few words in this. And they, you know, got together with the people behind the initiative and a bunch of legislators, and they hammered out a compromise. And it probably blew the whole thing up. But yeah, we need this so badly, and it was handled so poorly. It's very disappointing.
It really is. Yeah, I mean, considering that there are lawyers, people who know the law in the legislature, and they should have known that how this was going to all play
out. More lawyers than any other profession,
yeah.
I'm guessing.
And they knew, especially Tim Iman was watching it with the eagle eye, and he was going to jump on any little flaw that he saw in it, and he has.
And you know, when I made my comment, I don't know if we'll get a chance to talk about it in the show, but there have been amazing things that have been passed by the people of Washington. One is the Public Disclosure Act, mm-hmm. Sunshine Laws in Washington. Those were imposed by the people.
Domestic partnership.
Now what happens generally, and this is not a bad thing, but the public comes in and they say they want this thing. We must have this thing, and then the law, whatever laws pass, endures for 2 years, and then the legislature can go in and they can improve the law. They can't repeal it. They can tweak it and make it better. And actually, that is what happened with Washington's public disclosure laws, where they were actually made stronger and better over time. And so, I was not trying to say that I oppose direct democracy. It's just we pay these people a lot of money. They need to do the work, and the work that
Secret
we know needs to be done.
Dictator Tim Johnson has been exposed. Well, let's segue from that into public disclosure, as you excellently did, because one of the biggest issues and one of the issues that got the biggest outcry from the state this year was about transparency and about the Public Records Act. And I'm going to throw it to you, Dave, to kind of recap us on what happened.
All right. So the fast version is, in their wisdom, the people of Washington State back in the 70s passed a Public Records Act that basically set the foundation that the default is that public records generated by governments at all levels in Washington State are public documents. You own what is created in your name, that is financed by your tax dollars. And this has been the case for a long time. It's been improved repeatedly. There's been a lot of great things that have come about as a result of this. The legislature in recent years has decided that they were not subject to the Public Records Act, and the Superior Court in Olympia disagreed with them and issued a ruling in January that said that no, they need to bring themselves into compliance with the law. And the legislature responded with incredible alacrity and stunning bipartisanship to pass a really boneheaded, poorly considered bill that would shield everything that they had ever generated from public view forever, and release a limited set of documents moving forward from the beginning of July. And it really put Washington State on the map.
Absolutely. And then both houses passed that. It goes to Inslee, who has the option to veto it. And our governor got at least 2,000 calls, tweets, and emails. Like the state of subdued excitement became very much less subdued when they realized that the people that they elected to serve them might be hiding something, and they didn't want that to happen, which is one of the things I'm very proud about Washington State for. Many of us were watching as the deadline for him to veto came, and, you know, veto Inslee, veto. And he did, and what was really nice about it was the legislators that turned around, because they were threatening to override that with a two-thirds vote. But as more and more people were calling their offices as well, they sort of backed down and said, if he vetoes, we will not.
They did not sort of back down. the most important correspondence that Governor Inslee received was actually a letter from the Democratic caucus saying, please veto this thing. I think what happened was David really put this. There was a decision that happened while they were in the middle of doing their stuff, and I think I'm not excusing them, but I think they fell into a panic because there are rules in legislature that you can only introduce certain things at certain times, and they were right on the deadline of needing to do something. If they were going to respond to it at all, they needed to do something right now, and I think that they did something. And I tried to explain this to somebody. and I look at it as a Venn diagram. There's one circle of evildoers that really want to shield what they do, and they don't want the public involved in it. There is another circle of people that had real concerns about what would happen if the judge's ruling were, I mean, if the doors were totally thrown open. They were concerned that some of these somebody could do some data mining or things and create embarrassments in an election year. They had some legitimate concerns about correspondence, constituents
protecting citizens,
and your email, so that your emails are not subject. We had a situation in Whatcom County just recently in an election where people's email lists were obtained and then used improperly for electioneering. So there's
under
that
public
circle.
Disclosure,
right? So there's that circle, and then in this case, I think those circles intersected in a big way, and you had this big area where, like, let's pass this, then. Because letters came in and the public was outraged, I think cooler heads prevailed. And I think that probably the most important piece of information the governor had is that his own caucus was saying, please, please, governor, veto this thing.
And thousands of people.
And thousands of people.
I think his assistant said it was unprecedented.
Exactly.
I've never seen anything like it.
That's
on
right.
Any issue, you know, the response to that. And
yeah.
There was nobody that I saw in the public, whether columnists, nobody was in favor of this. You know, the only ones who were those lawmakers. Vast majority of lawmakers down in Olympia.
Yeah.
Like you say, Tim, there are some issues that, involving people's privacy and that sort of thing, and potential for misuse of some of this information, and that happens. Still, in the spirit of openness, which we like to think our society is an open society, and that, we have a right to information. There are going to be some problems.
Well, especially Washington State holds that dear, as Tim said earlier, that was one of the initiatives, going right back to that he thinks that we should be proud of.
We should be proud of that.
Right?
That Washington State is maybe one of the most generous states in the United States in terms of its public disclosure laws, and we need to be proud of them. We need to protect them, and I'm glad the people of Washington stepped up.
So, Dave, I kind of want to get a where are we now check, because Toby Nixon, who's the president of the Washington Coalition for Open Government, said this is a slimy film of transparency, and they're still hiding a lot of very important substantial records.
Well, they're still kind of working out a little bit of a deal, and part of the process is that the governor, on the very last night that he could possibly veto. If he took no action, it would just become law automatically. He met with not only representatives from both parties, but also from some of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit that was filed by the Associated Press and a number of Washington State newspapers and other news outlets to try and see, like, can we come to an agreement here. And I think we're still in kind of a transitional phase. A lot of people in the legislature who did support this did not fully understand the consequences of the Public Records Act. And there's had to be, they passed over 300 bills this session. This is a short session and they ended on time. They didn't have any time to really sit down and be like, okay, what are the actual consequences here? And now that they've had some time with the State Attorney General and things, they're still working out a process. The Coalition for Open Government here in Washington State is a very strong, proud organization that has very strong feelings about this, and I think we'll get closer to what they want as time goes on.
Great. You are listening to Cascadia News Now. That was Dave Willingham. Joe Tehan's on the show, Tim Johnson, and I'm Stephanie Contorsen. We will be back right after this.
My reason why is leadership.
My reason why is to inspire others.
Why do thousands of teenagers here in Washington participate in high school sports and activities?
My reason why is friendship.
Their reasons are as diverse as the students themselves. But the one thing they all share is the opportunity to have fun and learn important life lessons. Lessons like supporting their community, learning how to be a leader, and building lifelong friendships.
My reason why is defying expectations.
Is there a grade school or middle school student in your family? Then encourage them to participate in a sport or activity when they go to high school.
My reason why is to make a change in the world.
This message presented by the NFHS and the Washington Interscholastic Activities Association.
Cascadia News Now, I'm Stephanie Contours. We've been talking about what the amazing things that the legislature and Governor Inslee did and some of the things that they didn't. And one of the things we thought we were really close to this year and did not get was carbon tax. So, Tim, do you want to kind of just give us the background on that?
Well, Governor Inslee, I think, has tried four times to figure out a way to price carbon and put that on and get that as a policy in Washington. It would be a new source of revenue. It would address a perceived problem. It would be a dramatic step forward for Washington State, which has set itself up as a champion, I think, of in response to climate change. It didn't happen again. And running parallel to that and in sync with that was a group of people who understood that that wasn't going to happen, and so they're well prepared now to begin a signature campaign. We talked about this earlier. If the legislature is not going to do it, the public's going to do it. And so there is a signature campaign about putting a carbon tax on the ballot for November, and this is appropriate. So I think that they blew it. They didn't do what they were supposed to do, and now the public's going to have a bite at the apple. We did this a couple of years ago. There was a carbon tax that was placed on the ballot, and it was supposed to be revenue neutral. It was improperly framed. A lot of social groups were concerned about it because it did not address carbon pollution within communities, disadvantaged communities. And so those groups are stepping forward. So this is going to be a much more progressive and I think broadly supported initiative than the last one we saw.
Yeah, and it goes to what we were talking about earlier, environment, the orcas, the salmon, and a lot of this new revenue was to be devoted toward some of these recovery efforts and dealing with climate change. I was talking to a former member of the Port of Bellingham, and he said, we've been told expect 3 to 4 more feet of sea level. And I mean, I was just down watching them move the big ball down on the waterfront a couple weeks ago. And I'm thinking they're building this nice park, but another 3 feet, 4 feet of sea level. I mean, it's going to inundate what they're doing down there now. And it's very real, and it's something that we obviously have to take on at the state level, considering who's in charge on the federal level. And It is disappointing, I think, that we didn't get that pushed through.
So I remember, as you referred to last year, there were concerns among a lot of groups that it wasn't a fair taxation and it didn't represent, it didn't help the people it needed to help. A, what happened this year? And B, how realistic is the pushback about, oh my God, my gas prices are high enough as it is?
Well, it's hard to answer that question because obviously if you put a tax on the polluters, they will figure out a way to pass that cost on to other people. That's the American way. That's the capitalist way. But the reality is that we do have problems. We do need to address those. We need revenue to address those problems. This is what do they call it? A reverse tax, in a sense, where it's taxing a liability, not an asset. And the idea being that if you put a tax on carbon, you may see less of it. I mean, one of the things I like to say is, one of Doug Erickson's favorite things that he says is, if you want to see less of something, you tax it. When that, sales, whatever property, if you want to see less property transit, you tax it. It's like, well, then how about carbon?
Yeah.
Because if you want to see less carbon, then let's tax it. So I think
have
that's
have you ever asked that question
to him,
Doug?
Yeah. He's adept at dodging that particular thing. But, So yes, will there be impacts? Yes, but what I think is interesting about it, and I've tried to make this case, is this is a new and different kind of revenue stream in Washington. Washington is a sales tax state and it's a property tax state. We don't have an income tax. So those are the only two mechanisms we have of deriving income. And there are different mechanisms, different instruments that you could use to generate revenue. This is one. So it's an exciting thing. This will be a different kind of tax in Washington other than a sales tax or a property tax.
And that leads us into our last topic. We have just a couple of minutes. We haven't really talked about the supplemental budget and the cuts on property taxes. It was a big issue, though. Dave, do you want to give us a little background?
A very little background. You know, the legislature last session, 2017 session, had to do some major changes to fix education in the state because it was a mess and we weren't paying for it the way we should. And so they put together a massive proposal that shoved a bunch of money into education. And the only way that would get through is if we the legislators adopted the Republicans in the state Senate's plan to increase property taxes around the state by absorbing the levy capacity of municipalities. And it generated a gigantic $13 billion statewide property tax increase. And we saw a little bit of decrease come out of it this session, not quite as much as I had hoped. When the Democrats took over and it became their, you know, they inherited this Republican plan that none of them had liked. I had kind of hoped we'd see some more kind of new ideas, different ways of raising this money. Maybe we'll see that down the road. But supplemental budget, lots of money for teacher salaries, bunch of new projects around the state.
But sticking with property tax, we have 1 minute left. Joe, I'm going to throw it to you for any feedback.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to the assessor here in Whatcom County, and you know, he said 15% to 18% increase. But it's not across the board. This leaves me a little confused is how this plan all works, because certain areas, King County, mostly here in Western Washington, we're getting hit with a big increase that other parts of the state aren't seeing. And I don't know what the formula is to figure all that out.
But, well, we'll have to unpack that in future shows. Joe, thank you so much for being on. Joe Tehan, if you've missed him from the Joe Show, let us know. We'll try to get him back more often.
There you go.
Tim Johnson, Cascadia Weekly, and Dave Willingham from American Carnage Report. I'm Stephanie Contouris. Thank you so much to our engineer this week, Nick Corsilia. And you did an awesome job. Remember, we have that trivia question. What are the four horsemen of democracy? If you listen to the show, you should know that answer. Let us know on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. And hit us up if you have an issue that you haven't heard us talk about or a perspective that you don't think is being covered enough or the right way. You can always connect with us at CascadiaNews.com or find Cascadia News Now on Facebook. You're listening to Cascadia News Now on KAVZ 102.5 in Deming, Van Zandt, and KMRE 102.3 FM in Bellingham.